My name is Becky Firth. I also work for Initiatives along with Donna. I work in the areas of human resources for health, specifically on the international side, as well as organizational development and operations research. And as our moderator noted, I'm going to be presenting on some operations research we did on the CHW AIM tool, which Donna so nicely introduced. So before I begin, I have no relationships to disclose. So Donna introduced the Community Health Worker Assessment and Improvement Matrix. And we knew that the tool worked fairly well for assessment. We had used it, WHO had used it, a number of other organizations had used it, and yes, it seemed to be a good, useful tool for assessment. But it's also the assessment and improvement matrix. And the question about improvement sort of remained with us. Does it actually contribute to improvement for programs or not? And we wanted to learn a little bit more, and that really drove this operations research. We had three associated questions, the first being this one related to improvement. The second, what's the relationship between program functionality, CHW engagement, and CHW performance? So a lot of questions that came up around the tool are, well, it doesn't actually get at community health worker performance. There are no questions that ask about how community health workers are performing. Is there a link between program functionality and performance? And we thought this was a really good question, and we didn't have the answer. So we wanted to add this into our operations research to learn more about this and to try and answer this question. Is there a link? Engagement, which is related to CHW motivation, I like to call it Motivation Plus, was another question. Do programs that are more functional have more engaged community health workers? And then the last question we sought to answer was, what are the costs associated with implementing this process, the CHW AIM process? Is it going to be feasible for most organizations? And what's the incremental cost effectiveness associated with its use? Now, we were more successful in answering some of these questions than we were in others. So I'll just say that right up front, and then I'll present sort of a little bit about what we've learned. So this was a field intervention study. It was only done with six organizations. We had five intervention organizations and one control, so it's very small. We did not use the CHW AIM process with the control site, but we did assess performance and engagement with them. There were 156 community health workers that were involved for which we collected engagement and performance data. 132 of those were still present at NLINE. We have consistent data, baseline and NLINE for both. We only have baseline and inline data collection. It was originally designed to cover almost 2 years and have 3 points of data collection, but as many of you will relate, due to budget cuts, we had to cut it back. So we only had baseline and inline, and there are some limitations related to that. We provided limited technical support to the organizations to make improvements. We sort of wanted to test the tool. Does it give them enough guidance to make some changes on their own? And our time frame was September 2010 to November 2011. In terms of our methods, from the CHW program side, we did program manager interviews, program data reviews, program cost survey, and we used the CHW AIM process. To assess engagement, we conducted a CHW engagement survey, which had 16 key points of engagement that CHWs had to assess where they are on a Likert scale. And we used a CHW engagement interview to gather more descriptive data related to that. And for performance, we used national guidelines for service delivery. We assessed two types of service delivery, ART adherence. These are HIV/AIDS programs, ART adherence, and positive living counseling. We used the national standards for what's supposed to be done during those services to create a list of key tasks, and then we assessed performance as percentage of tasks that were actually conducted during the service delivery. So it's not. There are lots of different ways of assessing performance. This is just one. We understand it's partial. The organizations involved were very diverse. There were international FBOs, international NGOs, local faith-based organizations, regional non-governmental organizations. They worked at a variety of scales, district, national, provincial. They had a wide range in the numbers of CHWs they supported, anywhere from as little as 27 or 24 to as many as 405, and this changed a little from baseline to endline. The hours that they required their CHWs to work was also highly different. So one organization only asked them to work about 6 hours a week. Another organization had them working almost full-time at 30 hours a week, so a lot of variation. And a lot of variation in how they supported them. Several organizations provided only gifts in kind. Three organizations gave what they called a travel allowance or a preem. And one organization really said that it actually gave a salary, and it was defined as a salary. And the amounts ranged greatly. So the organization that provided salary was $105 per month. The organization that provided gifts in kind, we were only able to get good data from one. It was equivalent to only about $1.30 a month. It was very little. It was nominal. So what do we learn from this process? Well, in terms of CHW AIM, our findings suggest that it contributes to improvement, but that improvement may be neither unilinear nor consistent, and we really need more data. We've got two data points. So what we learned from it, if you look at this, which is basically the 15 elements that Donna had presented earlier, and we were looking at baseline and end line and some of the changes, yes, there's some changes in some of them, for example, CHW role and program performance evaluation, but then you also see some sliding back in other areas. Referral was actually weaker at the second assessment, as was supervision, as was linkages to the health system. So, and a number of things contributed to this. So some of the things that contributed to improvement were really good things that were happening that you'd like to see happen in any program. For example, in one organization, they really hadn't clearly documented the CHW role. They thought it was clear, but when they started doing more reflection, when the CHW started talking, they realized that they hadn't. And so they not only developed a CHW job description, but they had also had really serious problems with CHW attrition, particularly after training. They developed an agreement that was based on the job description. They had new recruits sign the agreement before training so that they knew what they were getting into before they invested in training them. They then trained them. So that's a really good constructive way that their assessment through CHW AIM led to a very concrete change. Another related to role definition was also really interesting. In that case, the organization had a very clear role for its CHWs, but the CHWs were also operating in clinics that were highly understaffed, with the existing staff being really busy, and they were frequently handing over tasks to CHWs for which the CHWs were neither trained nor prepared to do. In that case, the organization sat down and made a list of the tasks that CHWs were being asked to do, and they ranked them: red light, yellow light, green light. Red light, assisting deliveries. They communicate to their CHWs, in no circumstances are you to assist deliveries. This is way beyond your capacity. Yellow light, something like assisting a nurse with a suture where they're not actually doing the suture, but they're assisting by bringing materials. Okay, you're not trained actually as a clinical provider, but as long as there's a trained provider there who's asking you for your assistance, that might be okay. Green light, filing. If they need help with filing, that has very little risk to clients. You know, as long as you've been oriented in how to do it, that's okay. That was also a really good constructive intervention that came out of this process that showed for improvement. But there were some things that slid back, too. One organization had a really hard time with supervision. They had their funding cut. They had been doing it okay before, but then they had had a delay in funding, and they weren't going out to supervise at all by the end line. So it's not consistent necessarily. There are things that might advance and other things that might step back. And we need a lot more data points to be able to see a more consistent, what we'd hope would be a more consistent progression towards improvement. This is just sort of a compilation of all the different five intervention organization scores. And you can see two showed overall improvement, two were static, one showed some decline. That organization had a really serious budget cut. But again, it suggests that there's some potential for improvement, but we need more data. Performance. So one of the things I thought that was really interesting that came out of this study was the links to performance. And performance, again, was defined by task completion. So high performance would be more than 70% of the tasks were done during that service delivery. Mediocre, 39 to 69, and poor was 39. Average performance at inline was actually poor in two sites and mediocre in four sites, and no site had really strong performance. So that was something that was a little concerning, but also very interesting. In terms of performance change by the organizations, and here you see the control because we did measure performance for control. We saw improvement in two organizations and some decline in improvement in three organizations and decline in three organizations. Two of those organizations, Site 3 and 6, had a huge budget constraint, so by the time of our end line, the CHWs were not fully functional and not being supervised, which is not surprising that performance declined. But this didn't actually tell us a lot. I didn't find this very useful. What was more useful was a bivariate and multivariate analysis. So this is our conclusions, and then I'm going to show you some of the data that backs this up. So we actually learned that organizations with higher CHW AIM scores are more likely to have better performing CHWs. And all the previous slide doesn't show this, the analysis does, so I'll get there in a minute. Paid incentives, more time spent with clients, and CHW AIM scores were the most predictive of performance. So it does show a link between CHW AIM scores and performance. The link between CHW AIM scores and engagement was inconclusive. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the data since this presentation is short, but you know, we had bivariate showed there might be some relationship, multivariate, none. Other ways of parsing the data didn't really give us any confidence that there's a clear link. Organizations with better systems for opportunities for advancement, individual performance appraisal, and incentives were more likely to have more engaged CHWs, however. So we did see a link between certain factors in the CHW AIM matrix and engagement. So in bivariate analysis, we found a number of things that seemed to contribute to, that correlated with performance. So overall CHW program functionality score, so that suggested to us that there is a link. Continuous training, equipment and supplies, and country ownership. Service delivery time. So then those were in CHW AIM. Then we looked at some other things. The other things that correlated with performance were service delivery time. When CHWs spent more time with the client, not surprisingly, they completed more of the tasks. We saw a huge variation in time, and I'll get to that later. Days of initial training. Some organizations were providing very little initial training with these small, continuous training going on over time. A few other organizations had very, very clearly defined two-week initial training. Those CHWs that got that longer initial training tended to perform better than those that got the more continuous package of small continuous trainings. Incentive type, CHWs that were receiving monetary incentives in this sample, which is a really small sample, were performing better than those that were purely volunteer or were getting gifts in kind. And the incentive amount, so in this small sample, those that were getting a greater monetary incentive were performing better than those that were getting less. So in the multivariate analysis, three variables showed a statistically significant positive association with performance. The incentive type, cash versus in kind, service time, and the CHW AIM score actually held out. So that suggests to us that organizations that have higher program functionality as measured through this tool actually are more likely to have better performing community health workers. And these variables accounted for 32% of performance variation. So that was pretty convincing to us. We also did a cluster analysis at the suggestion of one of our colleagues at URC, and I thought this was actually really, I'd never done cluster analysis. I thought this was really useful and helpful, and it provides a nice snapshot. So we had two clusters. The first had 61, the second only had 17. Cluster 1's mean performance was 29%. Cluster 2 is 47. So cluster 2 is the better performing cluster. Service delivery time. Cluster 1, only 5 minutes. Cluster 2, almost 14. Months worked. Cluster 1 has actually worked a lot longer than cluster 2. We can't answer this question. It could have to do with, you know, less continuous training or follow-up training. It could have to do with burnout. It could have to do with multiple variables. But it does suggest that just working longer as a CHW, just having experience, doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to perform better. Days of initial training, again, I had spoken about this before, so those that had a more consistent and longer duration initial training performed better. Hours worked. Those that were concentrating more and working more actually performed better. So the organizations that were asking less of their CHWs in terms of time investment were actually also getting less in terms of performance. And the CHW AIM score, the higher performing cluster had a much higher average CHWAM score than the lower performing cluster. So again, this backed up our confidence that there is some association between CHWAM and performance. Not that the tool will make your CHWs perform better, but that those that have a higher score are more likely to have better performers. So what do we learn about cost? We learned that it was fairly inexpensive. Again, this is in Zambia, so we have to take into consideration that this is country-specific. These were small districts in the most case. The one that was multi-district was the most expensive. But it didn't cost a lot to do the process. It's a one-day process. It's a matter of bringing people together. We did it in dusty, you know, no electricity centers without a PowerPoint, very, very simple, very low tech. We did it in nicer hotels with PowerPoint presentations, and still it never cost a lot, and it doesn't need to cost a lot. So it's feasible for most organizations to do, even in international settings. We were unable to determine cost effectiveness because we were unable to get data on outcomes. A lot of these organizations were not actually collecting data on defaulters. They weren't collecting accurate data on, you know, deaths of people due to HIV. It was impossible. We couldn't get cost effectiveness. So we took the cost information that we had to kind of sort of look, examine the data and see what we could learn. And this is really gross. I want to just qualify this data. It's really gross analysis, but it's interesting. So Site 2 invests only about $93 per CHW. They have only gifts in kind. They're purely volunteer CHWs. But their cost is the most expensive per client served because the CHWs are volunteer. The organization was hesitating to ask them to do a lot, and yet they were investing the time in training them. So whereas on the other side, Site 5 has the most expensive CHWs. They invest the most, but they ask them to work a lot. They ask them to see a lot of clients. And their costs are actually less than the organization that has purely volunteers. So to me, this says just having volunteers doesn't mean that your program is less costly on a per client, that there is a cost investment, there's a time investment, and what we need to look at is what we're asking CHWs to do overall, not what's the best thing to pay a CHW, but what do we need to pay them, to invest in them, to get the best service for the client, to get the best outcomes, to see as many people as we can. And a lot of these programs hadn't factored that kind of thinking into their design. And there you see stars next to sites 3 and 4 because in these two sites, they weren't actually disaggregating the clients that are seen by the CHWs and clients that are also seen in the entire facility, so it's actually a little hard to assess per client cost. And this was another problem. In sites where they had CHWs working at the community and at the facility, they often weren't actually documenting in any meaningful way CHW workload, which makes it really hard to see how productive they are, how much they're doing, and how they're contributing. So just to sum up, we also interviewed managers about the CHWAM process. We wanted to get their feedback on how useful it was, how helpful it was, and we learned some important things. Everybody who has used the process in this exercise and also through more learning that Donna's collected over time felt that the process was useful, that it was helpful for their organizations, it was helpful for their programs. Program managers would use it again and feel that others should use it. They thought it was worthwhile. They felt that external facilitation, which we did provide, was really helpful. And I thought that would just be because they didn't have confidence to do it, but they actually also said that they felt that it would keep them more true, that they felt it's good to have an outside person there to ask questions, to check, to just give them a reality check and keep them honest, basically. Funds need to be planned for. They need to put this into their annual plans, especially in the international level where people are, as you know, there's program funding cycles. You need to get things planned in advance. You can't necessarily easily add things in midstream. And this actually became critical for the timing of the process. We had to go in and quickly get this done, and it didn't necessarily align with the project's timing, and so therefore improvement was difficult for them because they had already planned their budgets and they had no time left to improve, and they felt that intermittent support would increase improvement. And I'm out of time, so I'd just like to acknowledge our donor, USAID, and our partner, URC, and the Zambian Ministry of Health, and there were lots of organizations and people that contributed to this, so thank you very much.